It's NHL Fantasy on Ice, and Pete and Brett are foaming out the mouth, ready to go. They look at the light slate of games on Tuesday and even dip their toes into the Wednesday action. They answer your Twitter questions, bounce around their top DFS targets, and wonder what teams are done and what teams still have life. Stand by in 3, 2, 1. Away we go.
How's it going, everybody? Tuesday morning edition, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Jensen here with Brett Amadon, NHL.com staff writer. He's been on the show before. You've heard his voice. Good to have you back, man.
I'm happy to be back now that the All-Star Game is over. Second half of the season. It's arguably the most exciting time of the year for a sports fan.
And you have a different schedule this week. You're working more of our time of the day. But normally, Brett is watching every single one of these games during the nighttime and staying up late, waking up late, but he's a great fantasy hockey mind, and he plays fantasy, so excited to get to everything.
Doing it for Bobby. I wanted to be on the podcast this week. He called me. I couldn't say no.
Thank you, Brett. Appreciate it. As far as the games last night go, and we'll be quick about it, me, Pete, and Davey were all over the Canadiens last night, and unfortunately, they lose 3-2. It was a good push by the Canadiens in the third period. Mm-hmm. Holtby was excellent. He actually played pretty well. But that was a tough one to swallow last night. I was on the Canadiens, Davey on the Canadiens, Petey on the Canadiens. You had some DFS plays with the Canadiens. And again, the Capitals, it's tough to jump in front of them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a lesson that the Capitals are one of maybe two or three teams in the league. The others maybe being the Bruins and maybe the Blues, that you can never really be too sure about going against the grain, even if three or four factors like last night and some of the trends in the betting stuff maybe suggested that they were a great pick with some appeal. It's just the Caps are the Caps. And honestly, I saw Holtby has like a 940 save percentage in his career against the Habs. So that's something that I guess we missed.
It didn't work out. Shame on me for jumping in front of the Capitals bus. It's like college basketball. There's certain coaches you don't ever want to bet against, mm-hmm. Like Jay Wright or Mike Krzyzewski. I think this year, I mean, the teams, the cream rises to the top. The Bruins and Capitals come to mind. It's almost like can't bet against them. I don't think I'm going to try to fade them the rest of the way.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think, from last night, I thought it was really impressive by the Vancouver Canucks as well. And we're starting to see a sense that Thatcher Demko is able to be thrown in every so often. I mean, Jacob Markstrom is the clear starter. I talked to him at the All-Star game. He's played 60-plus each of the prior two seasons, and he's on pace for around there as well. But how do you see that goaltending situation shaking out moving forward? Because they're right now have 3 points ahead in the Pacific Division. They're at the top.
Yeah, it was good to see Demko play so well last night. Second straight start for him, but it was only his fourth in his past 20 games. So at the start of the season, he came on really strong, had a couple bad games, and then Markstrom was really able to take control of that number one job. But Demko showed at the start of the season that he's a capable backup, maybe a future number one. These past two games, he's kind of gotten back into his stride. It's only going to benefit Vancouver because that offense is humming.
I really wonder if, because Markstrom sounds like he really wants to stay. He wants to play with his fellow countrymen. Pettersson, one of the bright young stars in the league. Obviously, Quinn Hughes, Rookie of the Year candidate this year. So I wonder if maybe they try to bring back Markstrom on like a 3 or 4 year deal and leave the window open for Demko to potentially emerge over that span as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. But, you talk about playing with Pettersson or Besser or Quinn Hughes. How about the pickup of JT Miller? I mean, outside of Artemi Panarin, but we expected what, his production was going to be. Has there been a better offseason acquisition than JT Miller? I mean, he's got 19 goals, 48 points. That's one more than he had with Tampa Bay last season.
We were talking about it yesterday. The only other one, and it's an obvious one, is the Breadman for the Rangers, but that's almost too obvious. He was signed to be an elite player, and he's delivering. So in terms of guys that have stepped up with maybe a moderate expectations, there's no one higher on the list than JT Miller right now. And I think actually there's something worth noting here for the short and maybe long term. I noticed lately that Jake Virtanen is playing on the right side of Pettersson and Miller instead of Brock Besser. So it gives them so much more depth. They obviously have Alexander Edler back from injury, which helps both of the goaltenders. But is there any streaming appeal for a player like Virtanen, who shoots a lot and plays with Pettersson now?
Yeah, I mean, it's real good lineup placement. And speaking of depth, too, moving forward to today, Senators at Sabres getting Jeff Skinner back. a guy that, you know, he's shown the capability of scoring 40 goals this season, but prior to his injury, he'd gone 11 games without a goal. What do you expect from him coming back?
I expect something in the middle. I don't know that he's going to be a 40-goal scorer unless he's playing with Jack Eichel. He's slotted in to play with Marcus Johansson right now, and Michael Frolik, who came over from the Flames, hasn't really played very much yet. So it remains to be seen. But the main facet of this lineup right now is that they're striving for depth, but Olofsson is probably still out for another couple of weeks, and Buffalo has a really favorable schedule coming up. So I wonder if they're going to maybe give him a trial again with Eichel, who he scored 40 goals with last season. So that was kind of the common denominator of why he had his career year last year in a contract year.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really critical time for Buffalo. They're falling a little bit behind Carolina in the playoff race. Mm-hmm. Jeff Skinner has to be the guy that can step in and provide some depth scoring for them. You know, like they brought him in to do, it can't just be Jack Eichel. Can't just be Rasmus Dahlin.
But that's so true.
When you're coming up and you're playing your first game against the Senators, they've struggled lately, 1-5-5 in their past 11. I know Hogberg played well last night with 50 saves, but this is a team that if you're going to get back on track, especially at home where they're 14-6-3, tonight's the night.
Forgive me for my ignorance here, but Jeff Skinner, if you're a fantasy player and you owned him, did you drop him? Did you store him on IR? Is he available in leagues? Is he a guy that you're zeroing in on?
He's probably owned in about half of Yahoo leagues, give or take, but he's out there for sure. We actually have some good fan questions on that. There was one guy, he said, should I drop Victor Arvidsson, JVR, or Oliver Bjorkstrand for Skinner? Definitely don't drop Bjorkstrand right now because he's a red hot, and he's, you know, scratching the surface at his ceiling, I think, right now. I have faith in Arvidsson. I would probably say drop JVR. Do you agree, Brett?
Yeah, going between those three, it's definitely Arvidsson or JVR. You cannot drop Oliver Bjorkstrand. I mean, just ask the New York Rangers. That guy, throughout his entire career, has always said he's got a shot. Everyone said it, but he just hadn't, you know, he wasn't shooting enough. Now he is. He's lighting it up. So I would probably say Arvidsson or JVR, and if I had to pick one, I'd say JVR.
And we talked about Bjorkstrand with James Harding yesterday, and he's just a guy that's taken advantage of a prime role now that Duchesne and Panarin are out of the picture. There's more opportunity, and he's seizing it. So it's good to see that from Bjorkstrand. And then one other fan question, which I think was a head-scratcher, but we'll answer it. Trade Radulov for Skinner. Brett said, I think, heck no, or something to that effect morning.
Absolutely not. I mean, first off, I like Dallas way more than I like Buffalo, even though Dallas doesn't score as much. But, I mean, think about this. Which one of those two do you think is more of a pure goal scorer, Alexander Radulov or Jeff Skinner? Just off the top of your head, which one would you say?
I mean, it's not even close, like, who's the better player. Like, when Radulov is playing away from those big dogs or off the first power play, he's still a phenomenal even-strength point producer, creativity. Jeff Skinner's kind of one-dimensional. When he's not scoring goals, he doesn't hit. He doesn't, you know, if he's not on the first power play, he's, you know, rendered useless almost. It's just a difference in terms of the complete player versus the non-complete player.
So here's the thing about that, though. So you're right. Jeff Skinner, you would think of as more of a pure goal scorer than Alexander Radulov. Mm-hmm. Radulov has 7 power play goals this season. Jeff Skinner has 0.
Wow.
So that's, right there alone, and you know, add in the fact of Radulov's lineup placement, you cannot drop Radulov for Skinner.
Yeah, I think it was a trade technically, but yeah, that's just a total mismatch. And that's a really good stat on the power play stuff because Radulov, like I said, is not always on the first power play, nor is Skinner, but he gets it done even in limited minutes in that situation.
Well, there you have it. It's Radulov. And speaking of the Dallas Stars, that game last night between Tampa, what a goal by Jamie Benn to end the game.
Oh, man.
And then did you notice who ended up on the score sheet?
Gurianov scored
Gurianov.
A goal. I saw, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, baby.
Good pick by Bob and by Tyler Seguin, who set the table for the second half at the All-Star game, saying Gurianov was going to show it up a little bit. So, yeah, that was great to see. And when Jamie Benn gets going like this, it always gets me jacked up, juiced up. He's one of my favorite players in the league. And to see him like make the defensive play and then have the dangle move. And
excellent.
He had a couple of sweet moves yesterday, scored 2 goals. So I'm back on the Ben fantasy hype train.
Excellent. Are you a Ben owner? I believe you said you were.
Am,
and
yeah.
He's always sort of a guy who, you know, you had high expectations for. He kind of, you know, struggled a little bit. Are you a Ben owner? And are you still a Ben owner?
Yeah, I am.
Nice.
I am. In my main, like, deepest league, it counts hits. So I used an early-ish pick on him, maybe 4th or 5th round, and I'm happy I did because I think Dallas can start to put it together offensively. Even if, like, Sagan, like he was saying the other day, he was saying the guys aren't, like, as concerned about having crazy offensive numbers. Like, they want to win games and stuff. Like, they want to play that winning style. So, which doesn't always cater to high offensive production, but still, I think you're going to see many glimpses of it from guys like Radulov and Ben Gurianov. But I know Rupe Hintz got injured last night. I know he's one of your adored players in the league, and me too. So how do they adjust if he misses any time?
Well, I believe Rupe plays on the second power play with Gurianov.
And second line, too.
Yeah, so they've had nice chemistry on those cross-slot passes for one-timers. I mean, Gurianov's got a heck of a shot. We'll see. We got to see how long he's out for, but Rupe is absolutely – I mean, he's an important part of that team, a young player like Gurianov that can develop together, and they would only develop chemistry. You know, we'll see what happens.
If he's the second-line center, Rupe, like he has been recently, you have a couple of options. Like, Ben and Sagan can play center on separate lines, or you could do even Pavelski moving from wing to center. But I know he's a little bit older. Yeah, I just think it's anybody's guess. We'll see what the coach does, and we'll break it down from there. So the other game on Tuesday, there's only two games, one of the lightest Tuesday slates of the season. St. Louis Blues, second of a back-to-back at the Flames. So there's that Tkachuk storyline. And I know there's another big Tkachuk storyline, maybe the biggest of all on Wednesday.
Well, that's almost kind of like why if we're going to bet tonight, I think you got to hammer the St. Louis Blues. I can't imagine. Well, one, St. Louis obviously benefit. They lost last night, but they got the benefit maybe getting the rust off from the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Okay, so that and Binnington will be in net tonight. So you got that added benefit. But also, I find it hard to believe that Tkachuk's not going to be thinking about the Oilers and Zach Cassian tomorrow.
Yeah, so Cassian, has he played a game since his suspension? No,
his
right?
suspension will end tomorrow. Like, he returns against the
Flames. Right, it ended before the break, and he's coming back on Wednesday. So, and then it was crazy. After the actual All-Star game, Bill Price, who's my editor in chief, asked me to talk to Matthew Tkachuk about the Draisaitl thing, and some other reporter asked about it, and I pretty much asked him, like, do you think this adds some fuel to the fire to the rivalry? Because you guys are, like, tied in the standings, right? The Oilers and the Flames. It's not just this issue between Draisaitl and Tkachuk and Cassian and Tkachuk. It's like standings implications too, and he pretty much probably said the opposite of what he thought.
You know, as much as I like St. Louis tonight, we were talking about it a little bit, especially with Dallas, how, you know, they might not score a lot of goals. They want to play that winning style. Well, that's what St. Louis has been doing. You know, Tarasenko, we don't know when he's going to return anymore. And there's some guys, David Perron, obviously their leading goal scorer, but there are some guys that need to step up. And one person in particular I'm looking for in the second half of the season, you know, as well as he's played, you know, defensively face-offs, Ryan O'Reilly, he has 9 goals this season. You want to see him closer to 20, and especially with Tarasenko out, you need to see a couple guys step up. He's one that I think is going to turn it on.
Yeah, very fair criticism on O'Reilly. I think we've seen some depth production lately. I know Sanford scored on Monday. There's Alexander Steen, who used to be a staple in the Blues top six before this new wave of talent that they had and winning the cup. But yeah, Steen, I know, has been really productive, and he's like one of the rare bottom six forwards that you might want to stream any given night, like for tonight.
And we'll take a peek at the Wednesday slate as well, because we don't have a show tomorrow. But the two-game slate, I don't know, is DFS in the mix tonight with two games? That's my first question. The second thing I'll say is, I would lean to the St. Louis Blues this evening. I understand the travel schedule is shaky, but Binnington and Net coming off the loss last night, decent price tonight, I would take the Blues.
I agree. I think I'll learn from the mistake yesterday. I said the Blues are one of those teams that even when factors are set against them, you might still trust in certain spots. And even though they're on short rest against the Flames, I think they have, by default, so much more offense than Calgary right now.
And then if get the one more bet in before you look at Wednesday, I'm actually going to go Senators tonight over Sabres.
Man, that would be a backbreaker out of the break. Like we saw yesterday, Nashville comes in with some enthusiasm, some higher hopes than what happened in the first half, and then just an absolute dud against the Maple Leafs. So that would be a similar script if the Sabres lose at home, where they have 9 of their next 10 games. This is the start of maybe something special, and if they have a dud against the Senators, that could be the end.
So DFS targets, do people play DFS with two games? If so, give me a couple names, and then we'll move forward real quickly. Nothing?
You can. I mean, Linus Ullmark, I noticed for Buffalo, he is actually, like, Carter Hutton barely plays anymore. Mm-hmm. He's played 13 of the past 14 games, has a pretty decent save percentage over that span. So, Yeah, I would draft Linus Ullmark against Ottawa, who's on short rest, and I'd get Skinner into my lineup. I could see him giving them a little scoring pop.
Well, you know, I guess since I'm going Senators, I'll give you a Senator. Connor Brown's got seven points, 3 goals, 4 assists, and a 4-game point streak.
So, excuse me, you're taking the Senators?
Taking the Senators tonight.
Wow, okay. I feel like this is an absolute must-have scenario for the Sabres. So, I mean, the price is large. I wouldn't take the Sabres, but... Listen, the Senators have been sneaky at times. I just think this is an absolute must-have for the Sabres. They cannot lose this game coming out of the break.
Well, here's the crazy part about the Senators, too. It might not be Hogberg again, but coming out of the All-Star break, you know, they got rest, maybe. If it is, keep in mind that he has points in 8 out of his 10 starts this year. He's 2-2-6, so a little bit unlucky. Maybe that luck changes tonight.
Well, if they're giving up 50-plus shots on the first leg of the back-to-back, then... Who knows? They might even give up more on the second. So, yeah, I agree. I think the Sabres are in the good spot here. That said, if you're going against the grain, obviously Anthony Duclair is a really good option. He showed it up at the All-Star game. He had a hat trick in the first game for his division. And a lot of his former teammates were talking him up, guys like Chris Kreider, guys like Seth Jones. He is a beloved player for the former teams, the many former teams that he played for, and has a high ceiling any given night.
Tony Duke, one of the great stories of this season, and it was very, very nice to see him at the All-Star game, and Pete is absolutely 100%. He is respected amongst his teammates and players that he played with, and I'm a big fan of Tony Duke.
Me too. And another player I'm a big fan of, Rasmus Sandin, as we shift to the Wednesday slate. He had a goal and an assist, first NHL goal, very quietly, has 4 points in 4 games since the Morgan Rielly injury and 2 multi-point games. So in terms of consistency, it hasn't been there, but the offensive upside and the talent, the raw talent, is certainly there for this player. And Rielly's still out. Jake Muzzin came back, but it's good to see, even with Muzzin back, that Sandin is producing.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, when you're a 19-year-old defenseman, you're going to have growing pains. But yeah. I think if you look at his ice time that Sheldon Keefe has given him, you know, 16, 15, 16, and 15, 42 last night, those are not insignificant minutes, and the more he plays, the more he's going to go into that role. And you mentioned it, 4 points in 4 games without Rielly, but he's also +3, which means he's taking care of the puck. He's not making many mistakes. So he could be a guy that you can rely on in fantasy. Also, 7 shots. So, you know, he's going to get you some category.
I actually noticed Sandin connected with William Nylander one way and then the other way on both of his points yesterday. They're both Swedish players, so something significant. You mentioned decent minutes so far for Sandin, but sheltered to an extent, so maybe even he could roll him out there with the Nylander-Tavares line every other shift. That's not a bad spot for the kid.
No, not at all. And, you know, moving forward, though, there's one game I had a question on because we were talking about it, and real quickly, Nashville-Washington. Is Nashville done?
I think so. I mean, they're not done statistically because they are 6 points behind with 4 games in hand, so you could even alternate those 4 games in hand and make up half of your deficit right now. So they're not done.
Not
but
done.
Every indicator right now on the ice is showing that they might be.
Yes.
I'm just talking like technically they're not done.
But yeah, yes.
If you're watching these games.
I do think they have to have a push in them. They have to have a streak in them. I would have to believe. I said it yesterday. I have to believe they're going to string some wins together. But Pete is 100% correct. Show me something. It's time to show me something. I haven't seen it.
So the two things that really concern me with Nashville is, number one, their leading scorer is Roman Josi. Okay, nothing wrong with that necessarily, a defenseman, but 15 points.
That's so much.
Yeah, over Philip Forsberg. And then Ryan Ellis, another defenseman, is their fourth leading scorer. He hasn't played since January 1st.
Yeah, that's
so that's
brutal.
The one part that concerns me. And then obviously their goaltending's been hit or miss lately. And it's like, I don't know what I'm going to get each week because, you know, you had UC Saros shut out the Winnipeg Jets. And then his next game against Anaheim, he allowed 4 goals on 26 shots. So, you know, what are you going to get? You don't really know. And then obviously going in against a good Capitals team, you want a player for Wednesday. Jacob Vrana, 11 points on a 9-game point streak, 8 goals in that span. You know, I think he's going to torch Nashville.
Yeah, my goodness, he's amazing. And with Ovi out of the lineup, he took an even further step forward and had an expanded role. Ovi will be back, but still Vrana, lineup lock territory every single night. But back to Nashville, I think that, you know, that Winter Classic was a turning point for them for the wrong reasons. It almost like summed up their whole season. They started hot, but without Ryan Ellis, they can't get by. They traded Subban. Ellis is such a valuable player, and they just they can't hang with some of these tough teams in the West or even the East last night. Toronto's offense overwhelmed them all night.
Well, it's crazy, too, because another team that's kind of, you know, not necessarily getting overwhelmed, but is kind of falling of late, that's Arizona. They're 1-4 yeah. and 1 in their past six games. They've been shut out twice in that span. At the Ducks, it seems like that could be a game that gets them back on track, but obviously there's still injury concern with Kemper. I mean, what do you think about them?
This is going to be a very telling game because whether it's Ranta or Kemper, like I know it sounded like Kemper was going to come back.
Well, they called Aiden Hill back up.
Right, because before the break, it sounded like they were going to do like a conditioning thing for Kemper, maybe in the AHL or something, and then he would maybe join the team for their first game. Now I see on Yahoo yesterday changed from day-to-day to out. That's not so good. So, and Ranta hasn't been great, so Aiden Hill might play. You never know. But the bottom line is that the Coyotes had such a great first half overall, even with the slow ending. Like, they need some positive momentum. They didn't have anybody at the All-Star game. They kind of ended on a dud. This is a favorable opponent. They need to win this game, and it's on the road. They need to make it happen somehow.
And this is why they acquired Taylor Hall. 15 points in 16 games, 7 goals. He has to show up tonight.
Yeah, they need a multi-goal game from Taylor Hall on Wednesday just to put the Ducks to rest here in a game that they should win. Another team in the Pacific Division that I'm interested in on Wednesday is the San Jose Sharks. They got big performances last night for some depth scorers, including Patrick Marleau, who had a milestone night on a number of different levels last night. But yeah, the Sharks, like, they won a game they should have won. But one thing I worry about with San Jose, I guess Brent Burns is playing with like a nagging shoulder injury. You think that catches up to him eventually?
I don't know. You know, I mean, San Jose, they need their good players to step up. They need their stars to be their stars. And I think Brent Burns is one of those players where, you know, if he does have an injury, he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that's, one, going to say to the media, two, that's really going to let it affect him.
Right.
You know, really the key for them is Arundel, though. You know, he's really locked down that number one job, taking it from Martin Jones, which we've been praying somebody would do for the past 3 months. So, you know, we can talk about Burns and whether he's going to play through an injury. You know, we can talk about Marleau scoring a couple goals, what they need from their offense. But it really all boils down to, can they get consistent goaltending finally?
What'd you think of the Hakuna Matata goal song last night from, I believe, Nosens? You could have given
Stephen
me
Stephen Nason. Yeah.
I mean, you could have given me a zillion choices for
That's
a goal
funny.
Song.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have gone Hakuna Matata. And then,
but the first two, I saw the first two goals were actually like the normal regular
right,
goal song.
Right. Well,
the
there
Space
was some
Jam song.
Yeah, there was some logistical issues with the game prez, and then Marleau not really submitting his song, so the fans on Twitter were getting a little fired up. But then Nosen scores the second goal, right?
Yeah.
And then Hakuna Matata. Again, not atop the list of songs I would have chosen, but I thought it was it's a good thing they're doing. It's different. I like that.
I think it's a power move. I kind of like it. You know, you get the goal, so already you're kind of beating down the other team, and then that goal song comes on. The other team's got to be sitting there going, what the heck is going on?
Maybe it's what the Sharks need, right? Means no worries. They got to, like,
have a little
they
got to,
like, tune out the media a little bit and tune out all the negativity and start playing their game. Even without Couture, like, everybody is capable of a higher gear, from Hurdle to Carlson to Burns, Marleau, Thornton, everybody. So that's where we'll leave it with the Sharks, I guess, unless they do choose to trade for a goaltender. And the biggest name out there is Georgiev. I saw some fans were speculating because LeBanc is from, I guess, Staten Island. Maybe a LeBanc for Georgiev swap with a couple other pieces. What do you think about that trade speculation?
The last time I was in here, I tried to speculate on what the Rangers were going to do with their goalkeepers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I was right. I don't say that very often, but I'm going to leave it this time because I didn't know what they were going to do. I still don't know what they're going to do with their goalies. I don't know who's going to start week in and week out, so I can't really answer that.
Well, listen, we've talked about this all season. On every single podcast that the NHL produces, we've talked about it. I don't think anyone knows. It's a strange scenario. The Lundqvist factor is strange. Shesterkin coming up, and then they sent him down. Georgiev, such a young, talented goaltender. Do you trade him? Teams need him. what are the Rangers? It's John Davidson's got his hands full with that whole situation. I trust that he will do the right thing, but what do we know? We could speculate. There's so many different angles that you could take on this, and that's what everyone's doing. You don't know.
Well, when you look in hindsight now, it's almost like they brought in Shesterkin to get everybody's, you know, tails up a little bit, like worried, like this guy might take over, and then all of a sudden they got the best out of Georgiev for a couple of games and maybe boost his trade value. So one other fan question before we wrap up the show, an interesting keeper league question. We were pumping up Elvis. We've been talking about him for weeks now. His value is at a high. Do you sell high on Elvis? I mentioned it on the show yesterday, and we got a trade offer from a fan. Should I trade Elvis in a keeper league for Cale Makar? I said yes.
It is really tough to answer that.
It's a good question.
Yeah,
right?
My gut would obviously say no at first because Cale Makar is probably going to win Rookie of the Year. But the more I watch Elvis play, in his past 10 games, he's got a .948 save percentage. Obviously, he had 3 shutouts in 4 games. The more he plays, the more he makes me a believer. The only part I'd be hesitant about is when Corpusalo comes back, right, how do they split those games? And I think until you figure that out, it is really hard to trade for a guy who's not only playing every single night on one of the best offensive teams in the league, but he's getting 20-plus minutes.
Yeah, Makar is more valuable for the rest of this season because of that factor that you just mentioned, without a doubt. Even if it's like Elvis is starting 3 out of every 5 for the rest of the season, there is going to be some semblance of a split. Corpusalo played too well. Like James mentioned yesterday, he was an all-star pick before he was injured.
Right. Well, it's an excellent question. Appreciate the question. Cale Makar is a Hobey Baker winner. Cale Makar is a future Norris Trophy winner. Cale Makar is on a team with Nathan MacKinnon, Landeskog, ready to win a Stanley Cup. I get that it's a keeper league. If I'm in a keeper league, I want to hold on to Cale Makar.
You want a piece.
I want a piece, especially with the up and down nature of goaltenders.
Right.
You don't really know. Inconsistent. I love Elvis. Love what he's done. Need a bigger sample size. At this point, I don't pull the trigger. I'm holding on to Cale Makar for this season and down the line because he has proved to be the stud that we all thought he was going to be.
Absolutely. And then one final thing you should consider, too, is Elvis has done really well knowing he's the number one guy and he's getting the start every single night. Mm-hmm. At the start of the season, he was a backup, and he wasn't playing every single game, and he was very inconsistent at the start of the season. So when Corpusalo comes back, and they go back to maybe a split, where's his mind at, and how does he play?
Yeah, it's a psychological thing that a goaltender is. How does he deal with the negative times? Almost every goalie in the league, from even some of the bottom feeders, has gone on a nice little 3-4 game winning streak this season. So let's wait and see. But for now, I think we could all agree Makar is the pick for now and the future.
Right. How many goalies do we see win like 8 in a row or whatever? I mean, yeah. Brian Boucher.
Brian Elliott, maybe.
Brian Elliott.
There's
a zillion of them. Again, Cale Makar is my guy. Sticking with Cale. And if I'm in a keeper league, that's like a franchise player to me,
like
right?
The building block of the years to come for sure. So, Brett, thanks again for hopping on, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Brett? Appreciate it very much, buddy. Thank
you. No problem. Thanks for
having
me.
I know you were up early coming in, and I hope you got a little breakfast. If not, we'll go to the diner, get a little lox, get a little bagel, some cream cheese, give you a little bit of a reward for showing up today. Nice job.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
And it gets easier from here. Only 2 games tonight, so, with the workload. So nice little break from the heavy slates usually. So for Bob Ender, Brett Amadon, Pete Jensen, we'll talk to you again later in the week here on NHL Fantasy on Ice. Thanks for listening.